How's it going? And welcome to the Expanse After Show. Today we're talking about season two, and the premiere episode covers two of them, and we have a special guest. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
What's up, guys? We're back for The Expanse Season 2, and we have two-thirds of the original panel back.
Hello.
Welcome. So, yeah, today we're talking about episode 1 and 2. They did an awesome double episode, Safe and Doors and Corners. Ooh. My name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D. Lane, and I am joined to my left by our awesome special guest. Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Cass Anbar, who plays the illustrious lasagna baking Alex Kamal on The Expanse.
And I'm Maria Cavasudo. Sean, by the way, we totally miss you. Totally mm-hmm. wish you could be here. We will have a third person here, yes. I believe. But in the meantime, Twitter, Instagram, Maria Cavasudo.
Yay! So, immediate reactions. How good is it to be back for season two?
Oh, my God.
I mean, you might have a slightly biased opinion. But.
No, I've been looking at the Twitter feeds and the comments from the fans. Like, about a month or two ago, it just started, like, a feeding frenzy. People were like, it's too long, we can't wait. And I'm like, dude, I feel you. We waited literally over 12 months to get back to shooting. It was like 12 to 13 months between our last day of shooting and our first day of shooting.
Oh, wow.
And the weird thing is it was so long that we were like, what the hell is going on? But then the weirdest thing was as soon as we got back on stage, it was like we had never left. The energy that we had, the synergy that we had, the connection that we had with me and the Rossi crew, it's very special. We have a very special, unique, I feel very, very privileged and blessed to be with this group of people, right from the top down, from the creators, the novelist, James S.A. Corey, Ty Frank and Daniel Abrams, who are amazing to work with. They're just great guys. They're hilarious. They're super intelligent, and they're wonderful to work with. Narain Shankar, our showrunner. Mark Ferguson, Huck Osby, our executive producer, showrunners, and the writers of the pilot. And all the way through the writing room and all the producers, and then our cast. It's just, you love everybody. There's no douchebags amongst the group.
Oot.
And we just love to get back together, and we all go out and drink and eat together. So it was as if we had never left.
It's always good when there are no douchebags among the group.
Yeah.
It's always a goal.
It's one of my criteria actually now. Douchebag rule.
I was actually going to ask you. So given that, you know, season two, you guys are back having a blast. Was there a major difference between like shooting season one and season two? Or anything that stood out?
There was a little more pressure on us. I think we had set the bar pretty high in season one, and the first two episodes of season two, which you guys got to see yesterday, I'm sure you could tell it was a high octane two episodes.
We
brought in a director, Breck Eisner. This guy, I don't know where he came from, but he came in prepared like I have never seen anybody prepared before. He knew the script. He didn't look at his script when he was referring to dialogue. He knew exactly what he was doing every second of the day, every moment of every scene, and he pushed and pushed and pushed us all. Like the excitement and the thrill and the danger of those fight scenes, all those battle scenes that you saw with the Martians and with us and the Rossi when we took on Thos Sation. That was the director. I don't know if you could catch some of the cinematography in that first two episodes.
It's gorgeous.
It was gorgeous. He shot it like a feature film, but we didn't have a feature film time schedule. So you can imagine we were all just pushing it. But because we got to see some of the footage as he was shooting, we were like, what, is this guy crazy? And then we'd look at him and go, oh, no, he's not crazy. He knows what he's doing. So we all hunkered down and we just put the pedal to the metal and went with him. It was a wonderful, brutal, grueling journey, but we loved it.
Great.
So awesome. it was a high pressure kickstart to the season two. Unlike what the first season, it was just, I don't want to lose my job.
No. That's second always season, a good way to walk
second in. Second season is, I don't want to let everybody down. We cannot underdeliver. We have to blow their expectations away because they've been waiting for a year.
Yeah. And I feel like season one was just so stellar that, like, you guys have to deliver. Ha, see what I did there? No, seriously, you guys have to deliver. But so far in the first episode, first two episodes, man, did you guys deliver.
And honestly, I won't try to be biased on it, but I think it's going to just escalate from here. So, but my buddy Wes, who plays Amos, he uses this, this is his little analogy, and I'm going to take it and steal it, and I'm going to use it and pretend it's mine. he said season one is like, it was like a roller coaster. At the beginning, you're going up, you're building all of that kinetic energy. It's kind of scary, and it's a little bit of a slow burn, but once you get to the top, then that's when gravity takes over, and you just shoot. You run the shoot, and that's what season two is. Season two is we've come over the crest, and now we're on our way down.
How far into season one, or at what point did you guys know for sure you got a season two?
We did not know until, let's see, it aired December 14th. I think we got the notice December 31st.
Wow.
So we had two or three episodes air before we got the green light. But I will tell you, we got the notice, the green light, literally 4 hours before our contracts expired.
Oh my goodness.
Before we were all released into the wind. So it was kind of like, what the hell is going on?
What a way to give someone a heart attack.
I know,
different,
right?
Kind of roller coaster.
But
yeah,
it happened, and we were so excited. We were so happy. And we're expecting, hopefully, that the activity last night, the social media activity and the fans and the responses that we got, I think it felt like there was a lot more going on than season one. It felt like there was a lot more engagement going on, so we hope that reflects in the ratings, and we hope that we're going to hear even sooner.
Oh yeah, Twitter have been all over it. And if you guys are watching this live, feel free to chime in the comments down below. We can pass them on to our guests if you have questions. And then if you're watching this later, also comment down below. What did you think of these first two episodes? And we will definitely be pointing out your comments to our guests as well. So, you know, leave those comments. Let us know what your thoughts.
Or also, if something is really, like, pressing you, you're like, I need to know this, obviously without spoilers, get at us. Because we're sitting right next to him.
Right here.
Come on, guys.
Right here. Try me. Hit me up for spoilers. See what I say. I might tell you something.
Donkey balls.
Oh.
Right. Nice throwback to season one. And then, guys, just a reminder, too. This is about the show. Though, I will say I am happy that I have read the book, first book, and on the second book now. And so I'll try to let you know how close it is. Because I know some of you care about that. And last season, Sean tried to do a little bit of it, too. So, anyway, let's get talking about the episode, and just as we go through it.
You can ask me, too, because I've read the book.
Okay, cool.
At least the books were shooting.
I was about to tell her something, and I'm like, I shouldn't, because I'm like, good, because we're picking up where it kind of leaves off, because I was like, oh, that's the end of... So right now, this season is kind of where book one, Leviathan Wakes, ends.
We're about three quarters.
The last part of it.
We're three quarters of the way through Leviathan Wakes. Yeah. Leviathan Wakes... we'll continue on into season two for a bit, and then
Caliban's War.
Caliban's War
just started that one.
We'll pick up.
Well, because we're introduced to Bobby, who's not in book one.
But if you remember from last season, book one doesn't have Ava Sorala either.
Exactly. I actually cheered when I got to book two and she showed up. I was like, oh, she's here.
Because when you're reading a book, it's a different medium.
Yes,
in the books,
totally.
You're inside people's minds, and you can hear their thoughts about Mars and Earth and the Belters, even if you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
The audience doesn't have that privilege, so you've got to show them. This is a holy trinity of Earth, Mars, and the Belt.
Yes.
You don't show them Earth, and you're losing a third of your universe. So we had to bring Ava Sorala in, not just because of Earth, but also because that character is absolutely spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And why make them wait?
You know, the way you put it is perfect. I think you lose one third of that universe, and it's just so important, especially like the pace. It just helps the pace and helps kind of engage us as well. So it's great.
And then if you guys do enjoy the show, I do highly recommend reading the book. It's very similar, and the characters are absolutely like spot on of like going either way, because I watched the show, then read it, and I'm like, you guys are totally the characters, which I love. That's great. So good job to you guys.
That's nice to hear.
Someone did have a quick question in the chat. If you know the answer, and if it's not too spoilery, how far into Caliban's War does this season go? Or do you have a rough idea?
I know we do not complete it, so
okay.
I can't tell you exactly where we will end off. That's a good question. I can't even tell where it ends up in the book, but it's too much material to cover in one season.
Sure. Well, that's good
what
to know.
What we do is, yeah. like I said, there is so much creative license taken by the writers. You will always get the story that you have grown to love from the books, and you'll get all the characters that you've grown to love, but you're going to get a whole bunch of really cool new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get some new characters, things that actually lend themselves to a television show. There'll be characters that are combined into one character. You'll get brand new characters, but anything that... I know we end on a beautiful kind of cliffhanger note for the end of the season. I just can't tell where it is in the book.
Sorry.
Okay.
So we'll just kind of go through what happens in the episode and chime in if you have anything to add.
Okay.
I might
just sit here and just
drink coffee.
Personal comments on it, because some of it you're obviously not there. Like, we open up on Mars and it's kind of like, oh no, they're under attack, but it's just a training simulation. That's when we get to meet Bobby Draper Gunny.
Right. What a way to start episode one
so
of this,
fun.
Right? You
totally.
Know, introduced to the new character in all her glory
mm-hmm.
with that incredible armor.
Yeah. Yes.
She's fierce.
I will tell you about that. Oh, go ahead. You talk first.
Go ahead.
If you want to say something about that scene, and then I'll tell you about that scene.
No, I was just going to say how they make a big deal in the book that her armor is very specific because she's really tall, which I like the casting. She's a taller woman.
She's
an
Amazon.
Exactly.
Yeah, Frankie Adams is an Amazon.
She looks tall, for sure.
She is. She's at least 5'10", if not more. She might be close to 6 feet.
Well, they
she's
point
tall,
out that she's
strong.
As tall as, like, the average Mars male and taller than some. So
yeah.
that's the point of, like, she's as big as the guys and taller than some. So it's either intimidating or a turn-on. So it's, like, the description, which I like.
She's so fierce. I really enjoyed seeing her on screen.
Yeah, and she's gorgeous, too, and she's a beautiful New Zealand Kiwi. But one thing about that scene that she told me, I didn't know this. She said that I didn't realize those armor units are 50 to 75 pounds
to run in
custom made armor. She told me that that they were hard, and she was, I don't know if you remember that run when she makes that run when she's taking all that fire.
Mm-hmm.
She said she had to do that 4 or 5 times by the end of it.
Sweating.
By the end of it, she said she was spent because she was lugging an extra 50 to 60 pounds.
Got your workout for the day
at full speed. Yeah.
Wow. And then we jump, we finally get Holden back, and he's doing the radiation treatment, but he gets that creepy nightmare. Because I was worried that scene on the trailer with the proto-molecule, I'm like, no, but he doesn't. And then, okay.
No, yeah, as soon as that happened, I'm like, this is a dream. It can't be.
Yeah. And then we jump over to Amos, and he's trying to open the Anubis crew, the safe, and he's talking with Naomi.
One thing that's interesting about that nightmare that Holden has, it kind of captures the spirit of season two. For fans, if you want to kind of keep your eyes open, what we witnessed in season one, at the end of season one, the effects of the protomolecule with that experiment on Eros. Imagine a group of civilians basically being put into that scenario where we have to watch hundreds of thousands of innocent people being killed and mutated and tortured, and we escape. We get out. We get out with a ship that could have taken hundreds of people if we had been able to.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of us deals with that in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of us bears the burden of that survivor guilt in a different way. And quite honestly, that's the kind of thing that gives normal, adjusted people post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
What you see in that scene with Steven is part of the damage that has been done to Holden.
I do have a question, actually, now that you remind me of it, is, as I recall in the book, they didn't get anyone off of Eros. Like, it was just Miller and Holden. And so it's interesting that
the first scene that I'm in with the gas mask.
Yeah.
Those are a couple of belters that we managed to...
But not in the book. I didn't think in the book.
In the book,
nobody survived, which I think it's interesting that the show had a couple people survive, which was an easier tool to deal with how everyone goes, hey, wait, do we have survivors or not?
Yeah, you're right, actually. There was no survivors in the book, but there's a lot of changes. Like,
But
there's
but
some...
interesting.
But these are really good changes that the writers decided to make the characters, to give the characters more compelling journeys to deal with.
Yeah. For some of those survivors, actually for your character as well, there's like a moment where one of the pods like gets destroyed that's carrying all of them. And
brutal.
Your character has this little moment and you can see just like this inner life that's really nice. So I think it
works. Did you catch that moment when he's looking at the pod that got destroyed? Did you see the photo of that guy?
Exactly, exactly.
That was my buddy.
So that's what I like. I mean, it's definitely a change. I have not read the book, so I mean, I am totally blind to this and everything is new, but I like it because it definitely gives some sort of depth, and even if it's just a millisecond, you're like, hey, you know, you have a lot of feeling and a lot of like maybe some attachment stuff. Who knows? There's so much to like dig into there.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting journey over season two. You guys can keep your eyes. Just watch how these broken individuals all handle this incredible stress, because we all handle it differently. It's kind of what makes the Rossi crew beautiful.
Yeah. And Naomi and, you know, Holden have their own way of handling it.
Absolutely. I like to call it the stress-induced romance. But yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's how they deal with it. Alex deals with it. I mean, you saw how he dealt with it. His obsessive compulsive need for perfection when he's going through his training drills. You know, failure's not an option for him. Like, he can't deal with what happened, and he's not going to allow it to happen again.
Someone pointed out in the chat, which I do think it's awesome that the authors are on Twitter and talking about the books, but it's how involved they are, and it's the person in the chat said, looks like, I'm not sure you said the name, but it's great how they're adding the novellas to the show as well, which
the novellas were the last pieces of material that were written after the first four novels. I think they were written afterwards, so the writing in them is a lot more rich and mature. They've added a whole bunch of information for Amos from the churn. You'll see in this season there's a bit of Drive, which is the Drive is the life of Epstein, the guy who created the Epstein Drive, basically created the universe because he allowed spaceships to be able to travel great distances at higher speeds and brought the solar system closer together. So there's going to be a kind of an homage to that inserted into season two. Amos even talks about the churn in season one. I don't know if you remember his conversation with Kenzo, the character playing Kenzo in season one, the guy who betrayed us, the little spy. He talks about the churn and what the churn is and how every few years the world kind of just stirs things up and churns and a whole bunch of people get wiped out and then some of us get to survive. And that's what Amos lives his life about. And it's a very, very dark but very mature kind of perspective on life, and it totally gives you insight into how Amos gets through life.
It's almost like an evolutionary kind of perspective as well.
Sure.
Absolutely. And it's a scary perspective.
100%.
Chat room likes your comment of the stress-induced romance, and they liked your lasagna scene as
did
well.
You?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
You liked the Kamal family recipe?
Yeah. And can you say the viola voila?
Viola.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was at first.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute.
Hey, man, that's how they say it in the Mariner Valley. Don't get on my ass about that.
How fun is it to switch into the accent of having the kind of southern drawl?
I actually have to work hard when we're talking about the show, when I get into it. I have to work hard not to get into it. It's such a natural, it's something, it just comes really natural for me. I think maybe I may have worked on it in my career leading up to this. The southern part of it may have been something that I was very, very comfortable with. But and also, my best friend is Texan.
There you go.
She talks like that all the time. She's always going y'all and this and that. And so I think it's just been like hardwired into me. So when I'm talking about Alex, it gets in there. One of the things I wanted to point out that was a big change from the novels to the books that was an incredibly brilliant choice on the part of the writers that fans get to see is in the novels when we went out to check out that distress call.
Yeah.
You know, when the Canterbury crew went out to check out the distress call. In the novels, Holden did not log that distress call. He did not tell anybody that it was happening. The captain just ordered the crew to go and check it out.
Yeah, no, there's some definite changes that it's neat to see that go between the two, because the characters just change up a bit because you're like, oh, okay, well, they didn't do
and if you
something.
If you think about it, like in the book, it was just bad judgment on the captain's part and the ship gets blown up and we lose all the crew, and then we've basically just got to survive. But now we've put that burden on Holden's shoulders. Holden, the guy who's never made a decision in his life, who has hidden from decisions. He's been trying to be Mr. In the Shadows, under the radar. He does not want anything to do with that. He makes one bloody decision in his entire life, and the whole universe explodes.
But that literally, it goes down to a different medium. I mean, when you're watching a TV show, yeah, you can have a multitude of characters, but you kind of have to center around a couple people. Yeah. In a book, you have so many pages to kind of develop all these people, or even not like throw away something like that, but definitely make it more of a passing thing and develop them in other ways.
Which, you need someone to orbit around, which is Holden. And Holden, with his one decision, sets so many things in motion, and then he spends the rest of the time, season one and now in season two, he's trying to redeem himself from killing all of his friends and dragging us into this mess. He feels completely and totally responsible. What a beautiful arc for someone who has never ever wanted to be a hero or a leader of any type. What a beautiful journey for that character. Trying to redeem himself from the loss of his entire ship.
You know, it's funny. I was reading an article earlier, and someone, it was more of a review, really, but he calls him the Space Jon Snow. And I think in a lot of ways... in a lot of ways, it kind of is, you know? So it's nice. Also, that's a huge, I feel like, compliment as well, because it's such a big show, Game of Thrones. And then even just to have that in the same, like, facet is like, hey, you guys are doing something right.
We were joking about it this morning, actually. We're on a little, we have a group chat, the four of us, and we were teasing him about that, so it was quite a compliment.
Chat room has a question. Unbeheld asks, can you please ask Cass who amongst the cast is the most like the personality they portray on the show?
Oh, man.
That's a fun one.
So I'm gonna say that in their absence and then get grilled for it.
Do it.
Honestly, when we go out for dinner, the four of us, we call each other by our character names sometimes.
Sweet.
And when we go out, Steven, if he doesn't have his coffee, he is a grumpy, ornery, crotchety son of a bitch. Nobody wants to deal with him until he's had his first cup of coffee. And this is something that is, he is self-proclaimed. He will not, he is OCD, and he is controlling, and he is so Holden sometimes. Dominique is a ballsy, pushy, confident kind of fireball. Like that I will never mess with that woman, ever. Dominique. Sometimes you can't tell the difference between him. Wes, he's a strange little prankster, that guy.
He is
a prankster. He is a very funny guy, but he is a very unique energy, and I will be in conversations with him. He'll ask me a question, and I'll be in a conversation with him, and I'll notice him kind of drift off, and then I'll stop talking, and he'll be completely focused and fascinated with whatever's going on in his head, and I'll walk away and he won't even notice, and I'll be like, okay, all right.
We were
well cast.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that I identify pretty much with everything that Alex is all about. Unity and group and family and keeping everyone happy. He's a wisecracker. I'm a wisecracker. I like people to be happy. I sit back. I'm laid back. And I like to be a smartass sometimes. And I'm like very observant. I like to watch people. I don't like to be competitive in terms of being the center of attention. And so we, all three of us, are extremely well cast. Let's just put it at that. You see us in a room together, you're probably going to think we're scripted.
Well, I will say also that you guys are definitely perfectly bring the characters to life, because if you guys go read it after watching it, you're like, oh yeah. Or if you read it and watch it, it's spot on. Casting did an excellent job in this show.
They did a good job. We agree.
Actually, funny, the way you said that made me think of, so it's a part later in the episode, but why don't we talk about how it's interesting that we have this crew of people from Earth, people from the Belt, and people from Mars, but they all get along. I mean, they have their own little fights, but kind of like a family.
Right.
So what is that dynamic like? Because you guys essentially represent like what the rest of the little universe should be doing. Of like, no, see, really, guys, it's okay.
It's a great point, actually. The Canterbury crew, or what the Rossi crew, represents what the politicians and what the solar system's leaders should be aiming for. Obviously, they haven't figured it out yet. Our group was put together, we're a bunch of broken misfits. Mm-hmm. Like, all of us are social rejects. All of us are running from something. And that's the... Doing the ice hauling is like doing crab fishing or, you know, the most dangerous catch, or mining, or oil rig working. You don't do that job unless there's something wrong. It's a dangerous... demanding job that is isolated. You make a lot of money, but very unique people do those jobs. And they'll go away, they'll be gone for 7, 8, 9 months. If they have a family, man, that is a very special family to be able to put that together. So you have a group of people that are completely socially self-ostracizing, and they're running from something. And those people don't want their pasts to be brought up. They don't want to talk about who they are, where they come from. So they all have, they all kind of look like each other. They all kind of look human. You can kind of tell who the belters are. You can kind of tell who the humans are. But we honestly don't care. And so basically all we do care about is, can I trust you? Do you have my back? I got your back. Are you going to keep me alive? And that's really all that matters. And ultimately that's what is important. And we figure it out in that environment. When you are not put in that situation of life and death, sadly, we tend as human beings to default to a us and them type of mentality. That's kind of one of the messages that's in this world. We've gotten rid of racism, but we still have planetism.
Yep.
What kind of gravity did you grow up in? What kind of atmosphere do you have? Do you have water flowing freely on your planet? You're entitled. You're rich. You're spoiled.
Do you have air?
Do you have
the belt? Yeah.
Actually, the way you mentioned that, so what did you think of the scene where we kind of have the council meeting on Earth, and they're all debating first of what's on Phoebe Station, and then later, we'll just do that whole timeline, and then also the we need to escalate violence, and even the firing of the commander when he won't do what is lawfully told to him.
Wow. How poignant.
And with current events. Oh, my goodness.
Poignant and reflective of the world.
I find it so funny because, I mean, it's not only in this show, but there are other shows that all of a sudden, and it's obviously written beforehand, right?
Yeah.
But we see all these kind of, like, parallels with what's going on today. It really does blow my mind. I don't know if, like, writers have a sort of, like, sixth sense where they just, like, perceive all this stuff that's going to go down. But it's very, I mean, it's strange because it's all handled. Like, I don't know. I don't even know what would be the right thing to do in this kind of situation. It always baffles me, but at the same time, it's like, well, what would I would have done in that situation?
You gotta have balls in a situation like that to kind of take a stand, because you're basically taking. You gotta have instincts and you have to have balls. And I mean, even the way it was portrayed in the show, our leader of the United Nations, you can clearly tell he's depending completely on the advice and the counsel of the people in the room, and there's some people there like Aaron Wright and Avasarala, and even our admiral, who are much more plugged in and much more in tune with what's going on. I mean, Avasarala, she's so smart. She's the smartest person in the room at any given time.
I love how much she swears.
Oh,
so
she's
fun.
Just great.
We love her. But she can tell, even without really knowing, that what's going on is not what everyone thinks is going on, and if you just do this, you're gonna notice it. Like, let the saber rattling play out.
Yeah.
Nobody wants a war. They want to get back to their terraforming on Mars. Nobody wants to go to a war because everyone's gonna lose.
Yeah. Well, it's like her quote. She's like, "Never listen to what people say. Watch what they do."
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
100%.
Oh yeah.
Get rid of the ego.
And a quick thing, actually, on that, what's been like with casting? Because, like, speaking of Avasarala and then yourself as well, it's a very ethnically diverse cast, too. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, boring cookie-cutter people. Mm-hmm. It's not all one type of people.
It's and a huge priority for the creators. Mm. They fought hard to maintain the non-whitewashedness of the books.
Nice.
I mean, in the books, there was a lot of color, and... not gonna lie, it was a challenge to convince the networks and the decision makers to maintain that integrity, because that's not traditional. How many places, and I will say this a million times because I never get tired of it, how many shows do you know where you have four leading ladies, none of whom are white, none of whom have their lives revolving around a man? Powerful, strong, butt-kicking, kind of ass-whooping female characters, upon whom everyone around them is depending in order to move the plot forward or basically just to save their lives. Mm-hmm. We would be dead many times over without Naomi. Julie Mao is like a hero in her own right. I mean, obviously, Bobby, you don't even need to describe that. She's like a self-proclaimed non-relationship person. And then Ava Sorala, who's married with kids, and none of that matters in terms of her function in the story. And none of them are white. We are the most diverse cast on TV right now. And I'm, again, proud to say, one of the most empowering towards women in terms of the roles that that we have. It's almost like the men revolve around the women in what's going on in this show, which I love. Like, I love it. It's like an amazing message to send out there.
Mm-hmm. I love it too. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love my male-led situations. However, it's nice because, I mean, granted, I'm a shorty, okay? But, like, it's nice to see women who can be powerful and who can be impacting and who don't need a man, even though, you know, it's nice when we do need one or when we need some significant other.
But however, you get that, too.
Yeah, but I like to see self-sufficient, empowering women on TV.
Yep.
As Dominique would say, it's normal.
Yeah.
Like, basically, our show is representing normalcy as the world is right now.
Yeah.
It's not what the networks and the producers out there are comfortable with.
Yeah.
They're still behind the times, but this is how it is right now.
Even the woman who was in charge on the pod when she was giving her speech, which I didn't quite catch her name, but she was pretty badass as well.
Yeah,
just
very
like,
ethnically ambiguous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very much like what our culture is right
drummer.
Now.
Drummer. Okay. She's a belter, and you're going to see a lot more of her.
Sweet.
The one that was next to Fred Johnson?
Yes.
She's, right. That's going to be our fifth. That's going to be our fifth kick-ass.
Oh, yeah. I liked her.
She's
she
in,
was
she's in much of season two, and she's a butt kicker. She has a great arc. Wait till you see what happens in this in this season, man. She's awesome. She's a Canadian girl from Toronto.
Nice.
Awesome.
When, I guess, like, we'll just do quick arcs on people because now it's been excellent getting in depth of other stuff. So sorry, guys, if we're not quite going with what happens in the episode a whole bunch.
It's
but
okay.
I hope you're enjoying the in-depth interview.
That's the eclectic
how often
way
do
my
we
mind works.
And the questions. And Miller's back.
Yes.
Kind of looks
with
like shit.
With a vengeance, yeah.
You know,
but
he's looking thin.
That man has been through the ringer and back
yes.
again. He's been through, like, one of those old-fashioned washing machines
yep.
with stones and, like, just wrung, wrung
yes.
out.
Considering how tough he is, you know, it was very, I guess, a little bit surprising, but not that surprising, to see him puke when they're in that pod.
He's like, I hate space.
I know, which totally makes sense. It's totally fine, but...
But
come
you
on,
saw
dude.
You saw him puking a lot in the last last season as well
yeah.
with his radiation sickness.
You know what? Look more like a belter now though, being skinnier and
I totally agree. I think he looks a little bit more belter-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you guys don't know, belter
yes,
are tall and thin.
Belter-y.
Belter-y.
They do a pretty good job of that. I mean, some people it's varied and stuff. Would you say Mars has a particular body type? Like Earth is, they would say, more shorter, stocky.
Yeah.
Though there were some belters, I must say, who had guns that were a bit too big of like, I'm pretty sure I always pictured them a lot leaner, tall muscle, not quite like... There were some bodybuilder dudes.
There, I mean, you got to understand we're dealing with we're trying to be as realistic scientifically as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at Earth as we are right now, you're gonna get people like
varied
and NBA style basketball players that are 7 feet, 8 feet tall, skinny. Those body types will exist on our gravity, even though the average man is 5 to 6 feet tall, 150 to 185 pounds. That's our average. So belters. Their average is going to be over 6 feet tall, under a certain weight, but they're still going to have some stocky people. They're still from Earth. They've only been out there 200-300 years. So you're just going to have a lot more of the tall, gangly types. And their bone density is going to be a lot thinner.
Yeah.
Their muscles are not going to be quite as dense. As far as Martians are concerned, I think Mars is about a third of Earth's gravity, but most of the Martians you're going to see are Marines and military, and they've taken upon themselves to train themselves in Earth gravity.
Mm.
So they're going to probably resemble Earthers a little bit more. They're probably a little bit taller, but only by an inch or two in general.
There you go. And then we get him, he's kind of part of the team, which was fun, of like, oh, he's back. And then they do the operation on the unnamed station stuff. Were you surprised with the shot at the end? The gunshot to the scientist, the head scientist.
I had a moment where I went, and I was like, no, yeah, that makes sense. It was just a splitting like second where I was like, gasp, and then the rest of it, I'm like, no, this is totally Miller. Miller's like, F you guys, this is BS, because I don't think he was on board when he started giving the, like, you know, catalog of all the things that they had to do. He's like, no, this don't work for me. Mm-hmm. And Fred Johnson was kind of like on board, and he's like, okay, I'm willing to listen. I think after you saw what Miller saw on Eros, he's like, what are you talking about? No
it's
way.
It's not only what he saw, those are his people.
No, exactly. You 100%
know,
true.
Holden and Johnson, as much as Johnson is an advocate for the Belter, he's still from Earth and he's still a military man.
Yeah.
He's a master military man. And so he sees something this powerful and his brain can't help but think about the potential.
100%. And I feel like the Belters have been taken advantage of. And this is something that they bring up all the time during the, or at least a couple of times during the show. They've been taken advantage of. They're just kind of like considered, you know, literally moon dust. Yep. So I feel like Miller kind of took the voice of everybody and just like used it to propel that trigger finger.
Mm-hmm. It's very observant of you, because you're going to find out in the next few episodes, Miller and Naomi bond a lot over what's happened because as the two Belters on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
This act that Miller has done, it's going to have huge repercussions on everybody. And because he's basically ended the entire quest that we've been on for the whole season one, he's basically terminated any possibility that we had of trying to figure this whole thing out. What you are going to find out is that Earth, Mars, and the Belt, as much as physiologically we are similar because we're all humans, we've been apart long enough and we've been in environments and socioeconomically have been so separated and growing up in our own environments that we have our own cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And the Belter culture, it's quite beautiful in the sense that because they've been the oppressed people, because they've been put upon and they've been denied things and they've been robbed and all the water and the air has been taken to subsidize Mars and its terraforming and to deal with Earth projects. They've basically been the working class. It has informed their philosophy of life, and their philosophy of life is survive.
Mm.
And how do you survive? Anything out there that threatens your survival, whether it's a Belter who is weak, whether it is somebody who can't produce, whether someone's going to get them killed, has to go.
Yeah.
And you're going to see some stuff that takes place over this season that is going to really be pretty pretty profound in terms of introducing you to the Belter culture.
I don't think we've seen the end of the protomolecule at all, though. And this whole extra solar being thing that they've introduced now in this first episode is super fascinating, because you never think about it. You're like, oh, yeah, alien life. Of course there is. But they really haven't mentioned it at all. So that was fascinating for me.
Do you know there's a little a little bit of a tidbit of true trivia is Phoebe. It's a real rock out in our solar system that is in I think it's Jupiter's gravity.
Cool.
It is something that came from outside of the solar system that was trapped by Jupiter's gravity. It is not from here.
That's
and
awesome.
So the writers, Noreen, actually,
yay for real science,
and Ty, they took that and they basically said that, because I think some people misunderstood when they said that this was aimed at Earth. The protomolecule did not land on Phoebe. Phoebe was the bearer of the protomolecule. It was the missile that had the protomolecule on it. Phoebe was targeting Earth.
Mm.
It just happened to get caught in Jupiter's gravity and has got discovered only now.
Yeah. And the chat room's been talking about the shot, the kind of execution at the end, but it was a good point that, and I thought it too, of Miller seeing too much, like, corruption and people getting away with stuff. And how much did you guys like his, like, well, come on, let's make a deal, and come on, I'll give you this stuff, and you let me go. And Miller's like, screw that.
I think at some point, though, I understand. You've seen too much corruption. You're kind of, like, almost jaded in a way. But aren't you curious? Like, I'd be curious.
He's going to get away and do more damage somewhere else.
How do you know that, though? They didn't even... I mean, Miller, actually, didn't even give him the chance to properly explain how to use it. They kind of started going into it, but I almost wanted to know. I was like, okay, like, what can we do with this? Mm-hmm. You know, of course you can use it for evil.
Yeah, you saw that. What you're describing, mm-hmm. you can see in the eyes of Holden and Johnson.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's why...
You can see those things going through their heads.
So I didn't blame Johnson.
Miller doesn't care. Miller's like, I'm done. I am done like dinner.
No,
He is pure.
Yeah.
He is pure.
No, which I value, don't get me wrong, but I would have been intrigued.
No, I kind of side with him of that guy would get away because he's just slimy. Of like, nope, it's going to be no advantage.
He's totally slimy. Yeah. No. Totally
Shades
slimy.
Of gray. That's what I love about our show. Is like, there is no right and there is no wrong.
There's going to be a problem with him and Holden having a discussion later because Holden is
Miller
like too
Holden?
Good.
It's too bad, right? He just got things squared away with Amos and now he's got to deal with the other guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 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 No, that's going to be fun to see their dynamic kind of grow and change mostly throughout the season.
Was there any other major plot lines that you wanted to discuss or add before we get to...
I
was going to say, you're the only one who can make predictions. He can't either.
Oh, yeah.
Before you go, I'm going to say is that what Miller has done is going to propel the story in some really wild directions. And season two is all about the characters, whereas season one was a world building.
Yeah.
Season two is all about the characters.
Yeah.
And we have been put into an ethical stew with Miller taking Dresden off the table. The protomolecule is still out there. We have no way of figuring out what it is anymore because the one person who understood it and has done all this research and has access to
it. He claims he understood it.
Well, he had access to the data. No one else could decrypt the data from Eros except for him based on what we've decided.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have this ethical dilemma that we have to navigate through because there is protomolecule out there. We've hidden some. So what do we do?
You were excited.
So I got super excited because I remember this because this was totally, this was a bigger gasp for me than Miller at the end. Fred Johnson not knowing that there were still people.
Yes. Thank you.
And he executed that order, something that he never would have done. Oh, so he kind of switched sides. That to me was like, whoa, it totally made everything kind of fall into place for me. And I'm excited to see like where we go with Fred Johnson because I also just really like that actor because he just is...
Chad.
He's cool.
Yeah.
Are you okay? Yay or nay for the airlock shoving that guy out, though?
Okay. I think sometimes...
Shades of gray.
This is going to sound horrible. Yes, it is a gray area. Yeah. However, I think in order to assert dominance, sometimes you have to just pick off one of the lambs in order to save the bunch, and that's exactly what he did.
Yep.
And I don't blame him for it, because if not, those people will crawl all over you. Like, especially with what they're trying to achieve, he has to kind of, like, assert some sort of dominance. And I think it's fine. I think then people will know that he means business, and they will know to be afraid of him.
He's definitely a strong leader.
Yeah.
Well, it's even more than that because it was also somebody who admitted he did an assassination attempt and is not just like a person who's going against ranks.
He's a wild card.
Creating more problems. I'm for the airlock thing too. I'm like,
he's a wild card.
He had to do it.
You have to understand all those people that he had in front of him, including that guy who got spaced, they were all leaders and representatives of different Belter factions.
Right.
So he has 7, 8, 10 different factions of Belters that are all disharmonious, and they don't even agree with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to unite them to create a common front.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this one person that's there stirring up chaos and saying, "You bloody human, you don't even deserve to be here. And, oh, let's take those nukes and let's use them." And he's like, "You're going to get us wiped out." He goes, "No, you will see." And so he needs to show, he needs to set an example and let these guys know, "You cannot do this."
Plus,
or
like
you're going to cost us all our lives.
If anyone threatens kind of like the sanctity of this, I feel like they have to go because it's just bigger than just one person. And to kind of piggyback on the whole Fred Johnson thing, I'm very excited to see why Vassarala was so, you know, adamant about betraying or doing some sort of betrayal and talk to Fred Johnson, which I think is going to be so incredibly awesome.
Let's just remember, she is absolutely the most intelligent person in the room.
And she's a mastermind.
This woman is 8 steps ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
So.
No.
Well, the other thing too with Fred that's great is that he, because this happens too often with any kind of situation, is where people don't know what's going on, so then they're not going to fall in line and do what you need. So when he actually explains to the other belters, be like, no, guys, this is what really went down at Eros. And then they're all like, oh, we understand. So it's great that he's trusting these people, because he has those issues of like, well, how much information do you give your soldiers?
Yeah.
Because even when on the Mars ship, when the torpedoes went by, they were like, what's going on? Bobby's like, it's all right. They didn't, maybe they didn't have to tell us something. So
that's our job is not to question. Our job is to do our job.
Any other final points before predictions? I think those are the biggest. I mean, there's other stuff that happened, but those are probably some of the major things.
Just enjoy the journey.
All right, let's get into some quick predictions for Maria.
Now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Predict. I'm looking for
it. I mean, these are obviously
put on my stone face.
That's okay.
Put on the stone face. Like, don't give away anything. Obviously, these are incredibly general.
Fine.
So I don't
know.
You
can do next episode, whole season.
No,
that's fine.
I think whole season. I think this season we are going to see like a full out war thing. So therefore, we're going to see some awesome special effects, because so far, visual effects have been amazing. And then I also think that this will not be the last assassination attempt on Vassarala. And I think she might get hurt a little bit more, because so far she's like, you know, at least in this first episode, she's totally, you know, whoo. No, this
close
will be
call.
Close call. She'll have another one, and possibly, I think somebody's going to lose something more closer to them. I don't think it's just going to be like, oh, there was an attack and, you know, people were lost. No, I feel like we're going to see somebody lose something close to them. It could be a Vassarala. I would hate to see that happen. And I would hate to see any of our, obviously, main crew lose anything dear to them. It already seems like everybody's been through so much. But I do think we're going to get some loss, for sure, and the tears will flow.
I'm sad now.
I was going to say, I don't want to do predictions, because I've read enough ahead that I'm like, well, but though it has been a little bit different, there are things that are not quite the same, but it's too, there's like a big thing. It's funny of, I wanted to tell you, and I'm like, glad I didn't.
No, yeah, because she literally texted me. She's like, hey, have you read the book? And I'm like, no. And she's like, never mind. I'm not going to tell you. And I'm thankful, because people have ruined Harry Potter for me, and I was very
sad. You finished Caliban's War?
Not yet. But anyway, thank you so much, Cass, for coming in. It was a pleasure talking with you about the show and getting in-depth. Let's let people know where they can find you online and continue the conversation.
You can get me anywhere on anything at Cass Anvar, CASANVAR, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm there everywhere. I don't do Snapchat. It's kind of weird. I do everything else.
And then Maria?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Maria Cavasuto, and then on Snapchat at MGCVSST.
You do that weird one?
Awesome. Yeah, they won't let me change it.
Oh, okay.
And my name's Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E. And thank you so much for watching. Make sure to give the video a thumbs up, 5 stars on iTunes, and leave your comments down below. What did you think of this episode? What other things do you want to talk about? Let's keep the discussion going.
Yeah.
Again, thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
We are done like dinner.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.